According to Gordon Parks, the photographer begins to feel big and bloated, and so big he can't walk through one of these doors because he gets a good byline, he gets notices all over the world, and so forth. But the really important people are the people he photographs. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, we examine the legacy of Gordon Parks, the photographer, essayist, filmmaker, and native Kansan, whose 100th birthday happens this Friday, November 30th. We'll be joined today by Jill Warford, Executive Director of the Gordon Parks Museum and Center for Culture and Diversity, and a personal friend of Gordon Parks, Dr. Bernard Franklin, to discuss the vision of a visionary and his life through our eyes. That's on Central Standard after this hour's NPR News. City, there's another horizon out there, one more horizon that you have to make for yourself and let other people discover it. And someone else will take it further, you know? Those are the words of legendary photographer, filmmaker, and native Kansan, Gordon Parks, whose 100th birthday would be coming this Friday. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Today we discuss the extraordinary life and legacy of Gordon Parks, and joining us by phone from Fort Scott, Kansas, is Jill Warford, Executive Director of the Gordon Parks Museum and Center for Culture and Diversity. And right here in the studio, we have personal friend, Dr. Bernard Franklin. Welcome both of you to the show to discuss this extraordinary man.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Now, let's begin with Dr. Franklin. Explain to our audience how you came to know Gordon Parks.
Well, thank you again for having us here. It was about 40 years ago that Kansas State University decided to host a Gordon Parks Festival. We were interested at that time in seeing if we could attract some of his collection, his photographs. So the idea was to get him back to Kansas, show him some good hospitality, and see if we could build a relationship. I was the student chairman of the planning committee. And in planning for his visit, I was the host for him for that week. So I would go to the hotel, have breakfast, discuss the day, and then take him from building to building, class to class, event to event. So I was with him the entire week and had great conversation about his life and his work.
What was he like?
He was an extraordinary man. You might think someone of his accomplishment would be hard to get to know or hard to peer into his brain or psyche, but he was very open. When you were with him, especially after the first day, you could think back in your mind, he's Midwestern, he's Kansas, because he's just down to earth, very, very easy to talk to, very personable, would tell story after story after story, train rides, what it was like, his first photography session, any of that. He was very open with it.
Is there anything that you were looking forward to asking Gordon Parks?
No, I probably at that time was more interested in understanding the learning tree and his growing up because those were interesting events that you wanted to peer deeper into, why he had certain scenes and why he did certain things. But, of course, I wanted to know about Shaft and music and photography. So I don't think I had one specific thing. It was just tell me their collection of work.
Some of the things you mentioned, the learning tree, Shaft, his penchant for compositions, of course, we'll continue to talk about throughout the hour. He was more than just a photographer. Jill Warford, what was it like meeting Gordon Parks, and under what circumstances did you first encounter him?
Well, I grew up in Fort Scott, too, so I think I first became aware of Gordon. I always say I first met him, but I really didn't. When I was 12, they were filming The Learning Tree in town.
Right.
And about two blocks from my house was the kind of a mansion on National Avenue that they were filming the scenes from the Learning Tree with the judge. And so I would ride my bike down there and just, you know, watch what was going on. We couldn't see much because of the windows had some kind of covering over them, but I would watch the comings and goings, and that's when I first thought, wow, somebody big is here. So I kind of followed his career from that point on, and would write him. I was a director of a theater festival at Independence, Kansas, and I would write him and say, oh, you know, please come. We had an award, excuse me, called the Kansas Citizen of the Arts Award. So the year that this was a playwrights festival, the year we honored, I'm trying to think of the playwright's name now, but it was 1986, and so Gordon came over to it, and we had a great time that weekend, and I would echo what Bernard said, that he was just so down to earth. I can remember we were driving him back up to Kansas City, and we were coming into Fort Scott on our way, and we went over the hill, a big hill, and there was cattle, and he just looked at it, and he goes, oh, Kansas, I'll always have it in my heart, you know, and I mean, he was just a warm, very down-to-earth person, but then when you thought about, you know, all the people that he encountered in his life, I never got a sense that, you know, this was a man affected by his experiences. He was still the same kid that grew up in Fort Scott, Kansas.
Did you find
that? That's when I first met him, and then we go to 2004, and we, over at Fort Scott here, I moved over here, and we started the Gordon Parks Center, and it's grown from there, and Gordon was actually here in 2004 for the first Gordon Parks celebration.
What would you say, based on your own experience, Jill Warford, on your own experience, having met with and sat with and rode with Gordon Parks, that he seemed most passionate about?
I think he was most passionate about learning and himself, too. He wrote his last two books a year before he died, and he was still working on projects. I just think he had a thirst for knowledge. And, of course, I tell young people when they come into the Gordon Parks Museum that, you know, we honor him because of all of his accomplishments, but also because, his life story. Here's a guy who didn't graduate from high school, and he got over 50 honorary doctorates. And I remember he said to me one time, you know, I just kept going. I kept doing things and trying new things because I never knew I couldn't do them. You know, and here's, you know, a guy who was a filmmaker and wrote over 20 books and all these different things he did, and he didn't have any kind of formal education. And I think, to me, that's one of the big stories of his life is to impart to young people is that you can do anything you want to do if you have the drive and ambition to do it.
Would you say, Dr. Bernard Franklin, that Gordon Parks' passion lay in learning as well?
I would say that. I would say also his passion was to make sure the larger world understood minority culture, especially African-American culture. It was almost as if he had an unspoken task to show the world how African-American or how poor people lived. It was like, I want the world to peer into this space.
And that's what you show at the museum, Jill Warford, as well.
Yes, yes.
The visions of the Depression. Yeah, yeah. Talk about that.
Yes, a couple of years before he died, he had a group of photographs, 30 of them, that had been out on tour, and so he knew that we were going to build this space and have a museum, and so he donated those to us, and there's some of his iconic work, and they're just, you know, they're just incredible. I mean, we'll have people come in the museum and just stand in front of a certain photo for 10 minutes and, you know, and be so moved by it because he had that ability to capture, you know, the African-American culture, poverty. you know, Ella Watson, the famous photograph of his, you know, it's just, I mean, he had the ability to look into into their soul, basically, and Red Jackson, and just, you know, a lot of different photographs that are just so iconic in his collection.
It's interesting that you mentioned the Ella Watson photo. That's one of the photos of Gordon Parks that sticks out for me. He renamed it American Gothic after the famous painting of the farmer with the pitchfork with his wife kind of staring into frame, and he reframed it, and it shows a black cleaning woman named Ella Watson, who you just mentioned, very strong features, standing stiffly in front of an American flag, a mop in one hand, a broom in the other. The similarities to the Grant Wood painting of the two white farmers by the same title are very striking, and I think that's why he chose that title. I can only assume that, but it definitely resonates for me. Dr. Franklin, do you have a similar photograph that resonates for you?
I think the series of photographs about the black Muslims was a real peer into that culture, especially the one that has the rows and rows of women, and they're all wearing white. That's a vivid one for me, and I think the other ones that he shot also, but the whole black Muslim genre of photographs probably is my best.
Those series on the Nation of Islam,
yes.
And the women, and
yes,
eventually Muhammad Ali, Malcolm X. People don't realize that Parks' career at Life magazine in and of itself was 30 years in span.
Right.
You're listening to Central Standard at 89.3 FM, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani DeFall. We're discussing the remarkable life and legacy of Gordon Parks. Our guests are Jill Warford. She's the executive director of the Gordon Parks Museum for Center and Culture and Diversity, and she's calling in from Fort Scott, Kansas. And we also have here in studio a personal friend of Gordon Parks, Dr. Bernard Franklin. Kansas City, if you have any thoughts or memories about Gordon Parks and your favorite photograph, little known facts, encounters with Gordon Parks himself, like our guest, give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write in at centralstandard@kcur.org. You had something to add, Jill Warford?
Oh, I was just thinking about the photographs and, you know, some of my favorites. The Fontenelle family is one that stands out for me. There's a whole series of that. And then the Red Jackson photograph, we have one of those. And I asked Toni Parks when she was here in October for the celebration, I said, whatever happened to Red Jackson? Because, you know, he was a gang leader in Harlem, and Gordon kind of moved in with him and his compatriots to photograph them and to find out what their life was like. I assumed that, you know, she probably said, well, he died a long time ago. But she said, you know, he really turned his life around. And she said he came to visit Dad the night before he died. And I was just kind of, wow, you know. And I said, really? And she said, yeah. He came to visit Dad. And she goes, I think Dad knew he was there. And she said he had, because of the Gordon's photo essay and everything that had happened, had really turned his life around and was living a really good life. And I just think that's, you know, it's a wonderful story. And, you know, I'm sure that, you know, Gordon probably didn't do that with every subject, but, you know, you think about Flavio, and he turned Flavio's life around. And so I think he had such an impact with the photo essays, especially, that he did.
Bobby tweets about his favorite Gordon Parks work. He says, emphatically, in all caps, Shaft, an iconic movie character, a box office hit that led to a sequel. Gordon Parks directed two of those installments of Shaft, by the way. And that was Oscar winner for Best Song, that iconic Isaac Hayes, Who is the Man, you know, directed by Gordon Parks. Let's talk about some of the things that people didn't know about Gordon Parks along the lines of what Bobby tweets. He was a composer. He also wrote novels, as well as The Learning Tree, which later got adapted to screen, which our guest Jill Warford actually was able to look outside the window and see it being filmed. Tell us about the non-photography part of Gordon Parks that you learned about. Let's start with Jill.
Well, he actually did a ballet. He did a ballet on Martin Luther King called Martin for PBS. So wow. That was a standout in his career. And then all the books, you know, we've got over 20 books, and some of them are novels. He wrote a book about, it's called Suncatcher, and it's about J.M.W. Turner, the famous painter. and then a lot of books of poetry, and a lot of books of poetry and his images, and then 5 autobiographies, which is pretty prolific. And, you know, The Hungry Heart, which was his last autobiography, was published just a year before he died. So he reveals a lot of different things, and in that last autobiography, there's new things revealed, too. So the books, the poems are beautiful. I've had people say, please print me out a copy of this poem. I want it read at my funeral. And, you know, the music, we play the music in here. Lots of different kinds of music, sonatas and jazz, and just some different things. And you know, of course, the photography and the film. So there's just not much. I guess he didn't write a play, but that's about all I can think of that he didn't do.
He did write the screenplay for The Learning Tree, adapted from his own novel. So that's pretty close.
Yes.
That's pretty close.
Yes. Yeah, and wrote the music, directed it, and produced it.
So. And was the cinematographer.
Right.
Did everything with craft services, pretty much.
And was the first black man to direct a major studio Hollywood film.
And some have described him for that reason as the Jackie Robinson of film, being a director and cinematographer and screenwriter of his own film that he adapted from his own book. Talk about that aspect of it, a trailblazer, Dr. Franklin.
Yeah, when he arrived at Kansas State, this was 1972. It was a year after Shaft was released. So for us, he was the Spike Lee. He was the one who introduced the African-American genre of movies that later people began to call blaxploitation movies. And we asked him about that theme, and of course he didn't believe that. That's not how he intended for the movie to be portrayed or to come off in any way. Again, Gordon was really interested in exposing the larger world to a culture that had been ignored or not seen. So his frame of mind was, how can I portray, how can I show, how can I demonstrate this culture? So for us, this was a man larger than life who happened to come into Manhattan, Kansas, a year after Shaft.
And made a splash.
Made a splash.
In fact, that Shaft music is actually playing in my head as we talk, and I'm envisioning some of those Gordon Park shots in those opening credits and those opening scenes. It's pretty easy to stick in your head. We're talking about the life and legacy of the legendary Gordon Parks, Kansas native photographer, cinematographer, composer, Renaissance man in the 20th century, probably one of the 20th century's greatest Renaissance men of any color. Give us a call at 816-235-2888. If you have a favorite photograph, if you want to give us little-known facts, if you had a personal encounter with Gordon Parks himself, as our guests have, you can also write in at centralstandard@kcur.org. We're going to go to Maxine in Cameron. Maxine, welcome to Central Standard.
Well, I taught junior high school. I taught in a junior high school in San Bruno, California, back in the 70s. Seventh graders, greatest kids in the world. And one of the movies I showed in my class every year was Choice of Weapons by Gordon Parks. Are you familiar with that?
Jill, are you familiar with Choice of Weapons?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I am. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear very well, but yes, I'm very familiar with Choice of Weapons.
What strikes you most about that film, Maxine?
The fact that as a young person, I think he was a teenager at the time, and I'm not sure. It's been a long time since I last saw that film, and I would love to see it again. He's on a bus, and he's going to rob the bus driver of some money. And he had a gun, and something stopped him. And that's his whole point of he had a choice of weapons, and he decided that his weapon of choice would be the camera and the pen, not the gun. And it changed his life. And that was my point of showing this to 12, 13-year-old kids. We had a highly multicultural school, wonderful, wonderful kids. I cannot tell you how great those kids were. But I also think it spoke to them on a level that as a Caucasian woman from the suburbs could not have possibly have communicated, as did Gordon Parks. I'm just everlastingly grateful for that film, and I hope it's still around, and I hope people are still showing it.
Thank you very much, Maxine, for sharing your memories of Gordon Parks' work. And we ask our wider audience to share your memories of Gordon Parks' work as well. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write in your thoughts at centralstandard@kcur.org. As Maxine points out, Dr. Franklin, it's important to note that Gordon Parks, his contemporaries were Marcus Garvey, Malcolm X, but you don't think about him in that regard. He did have a weapon of choice in the pen and in the camera. Talk about that. Growing up during this volatile era.
He certainly did. He could have gone many different directions. But here was a man who said, there's a place for someone in the arts. There's a place for someone like me to pick up a pen or to pick up a camera and have some of the same impact on civil rights or on culture for the larger culture. The story when he tells you about the first time that he bought the camera at a Pons shop and took the first round of pictures, and he saw how he could demonstrate, because I think the first round was pictures of geese or birds, and the man who developed the film said, man, these are really great. That was his window in to say, well, I can transfer shooting birds to shooting people, to shooting stories, to shooting poverty, to capture culture. And so I think he saw himself, probably wouldn't describe himself as a civil rights leader, but certainly he had an impact in that civil rights period.
Joe Warford, talk about that aspect of having an impact in the civil rights period without any type of grandstanding, agitation, soapboxing, marching, any of that.
Right. We've talked about that, his civil rights activity was his camera and showing, taking pictures of all he did and getting those published in Life were just as impactful as doing the marching and giving speeches and things like that. Gordon had his own quiet way, but just as effective when you see some of the different photos and you see what the message he's trying to get across.
What does his body of work beyond photography say about the message that he was trying to get across? What comes out in his poetry? What comes out in his memoirs? What comes out in the learning tree that we don't see in his photography or is an extension of his photography, Jill?
You mean in relationship to civil rights?
In relationship to his message.
Well, I think it's in every piece of work he has. The Learning Tree is such a good novel. I think it used to be taught a lot more than it is now, but, the whole story there of the young black men and the way they were treated. And, of course, Gordon, he grew up in Fort Scott, and that's the way it was at that time. And he had a lot of bad feelings throughout the years. I'm sure he made his peace finally because he decided to be buried in Fort Scott. But as the world changed, Fort Scott changed too. But that's what happened to him. And I remember asking him how much of The Learning Tree, though it is billed as a novel, it really is his first autobiography. And he said, probably about 85% of it's based on fact. And if you think of all the different things that happened in that book, it was a terrible time to be a young black man in southeastern Kansas, for sure.
Brenda, welcome to Central Standard. We're talking about the remarkable life and legacy of Gordon Parks.
Go ahead. Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
My two aunts lived, one lived in Franklin, Kansas, and the other in Pittsburgh, Kansas. And they were very, very small communities. They didn't even have addresses. They were at post office boxes. And both of my aunts were senior citizens at the time. And when Gordon Parks came into the community, they were soliciting extras for the movie. And my two aunts were selected. And they were so thrilled to be a part of the fact that a black man was making the movie, number one. And then number two, the fact that it did generate just a little bit of revenue for some of them that was there, because the communities in Kansas, Pittsburgh, Fort Scott, and Franklin, Kansas, and so forth, were very, very small, and the population of African Americans was even smaller yet. So the fact that they got an opportunity to be a part of the movie, they got the clothes, and they dressed in that particular era, and they were so happy to be able to meet him in person, and then also that he really did treat them very royally, you know, with the lunches and all of that. And I think it's a picnic scene of some sort that was in it, and they were part of that that group as well. So they were so grateful. The fact that they, I think, first of all, got to live to see a black man actually direct a film, and it was based off of a book that he authored. So they were really, really grateful, and they told us all about it as young kids and all of that, and I was very impressed. And of course, we had to read the book as well.
Thank you, Brenda. We're discussing the remarkable life and legacy of Gordon Parks, whose 100th birthday would be this Friday, November 30th. Our guests are Jill Warford, the executive director of the Gordon Parks Museum and Center for Culture and Diversity. She's calling from Fort Scott, Kansas, the home of Gordon Parks. And we have a personal friend in the studio, Dr. Bernard Franklin. We'll continue to discuss his remarkable life. Meanwhile, Kansas City, what Gordon Parks' work has had an effect on your life? Share your little-known facts or encounters with Gordon Parks himself or encounters with his photographs. Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write in on Facebook or on Twitter at KCURCST. Central Standard returns in just a moment. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Examining his own life, Gordon Parks said he had become sort of involved in things that were happening to people. No matter what color they be, whether they be Indians or Negroes or poor white people or anyone who he thought was more or less getting a bad shake. Those are the words of Gordon Parks. And we now continue our discussion about the extraordinary life and legacy of Gordon Parks, who would be 100 on Friday, November 30th. Our guests are Jill Warford. She's the executive director of the Gordon Parks Museum and Center for Culture and Diversity. She's calling in from Gordon Parks' hometown of Fort Scott. And we have a personal friend of Mr. Parks here in the studio, Dr. Bernard Franklin. Kansas City, if you have any thoughts or memories about Gordon Parks, please share them with us. Do you have a favorite Gordon Parks photograph or essay or film or even ballet or musical composition that you'd like to share? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write in at Twitter to honor this incredible man at KCURCST. Talk about the fact, Dr. Franklin, that Gordon Parks was a self-taught man, not only in the disciplines that helped him make his living, but in all other aspects as well. Did he ever talk to you about the process of learning?
Of course he did. When we had time when he was at the university, we would sneak away and get a cup of coffee or get a Coke, because I wanted to know how he was trained or where did he learn. And he would say, man, I just picked up a camera. And that's just pretty much how he would say it. I just picked up a camera, started taking pictures, or I just began to write. When you're with him, he always has a pad. And so he does a lot of writing, taking notes, writing down things. So I think for him it was just a process of saying, there's nothing I can't do. There's nothing I can't learn. There's nothing I can't move into, whether it's music. And even, and Jill probably can speak to this as well, when you went to his apartment was full of unfinished stuff. There's books over here. There's music over here. There's some photography in this room. It was like a man who was on a mission to do good stuff that never finished.
Joe Warford, he was constantly in action. Talk about that.
He was. I remember being in his apartment, and you know, it was a typical artist. I mean, there was things laying everywhere. In our museum, we're recreating part of his apartment, and, you know, I had to kind of think, am I really going to try to recreate it as it exactly was? Because I don't think we'd be able to walk through it, but there was always, you know, always things he was working on. I know his longtime assistant, Joanna Fiore, would talk about with me all the different things he was working on. And I think that, you know, he certainly didn't want to die because he had so many things to do. He still had things to do. And Joanna said he was kind of feverish about, you know, getting things done. And then he was notorious for not being able to sleep at night. He was kind of a night owl, and he'd get up and he'd still go in and work on the piano. In fact, just a few days before he died, Tony said he was, you know, she said, Dad wants to get up and go to the piano. And David, her brother, was there too. And he said, well, what are we going to do? And she goes, well, we're going to help him to the piano and, you know, let him do what he wants to do. But he had that incredible drive to keep going and to keep learning and to keep producing things. And I think he, you know, up until the very last was doing that.
We're talking about the life and legacy of the legendary Gordon Parks, a native Kansan and Renaissance man. Gary in Parkville, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, this has been a really fun show to listen to this morning. I appreciate you taking my call. You know, I'm a white kid that grew up in Overland Park and then went out to K-State. And, you know, color was not a really big part of my upbringing, you know, certainly out of K-State. And I remember, I think it was a group called the Black Student Union, I'm not really sure, but they sponsored a couple of shows. And as Bernard is talking about Gordon Parks coming to K-State, I remember actually seeing Gordon Parks when he was speaking at K-State and having a moment to talk to him. And his presence, his story, the things that he said were really instrumental to this kid who really didn't have a good picture of what he wanted to do with a career, what he wanted to do with his life. And Gordon Parks was just this kind of bigger-than-life guy that opened up the world for me. And it was really exciting having that opportunity to see that. And it's kind of funny, in that same year, as part of the same speaking group, there was a comedian by the name of Godfrey Cambridge, who had become a political activist and moved away from being a comedian. He also came to K-State in that same series. And those two men talking about their lives' experiences really provoked me in choosing a career path, and I just really appreciate it. And I appreciate listening to your show this morning and having these memories provoked.
Before you go, Gary.
Sure, yeah.
What was it in particular that Mr. Parks said that has resonated with you all these years?
You know, it was just... It's not a specific word or a specific story. It was the essence of his life, of the challenges that he overcame with a vigor, and his willingness not to just get past it and put it behind, but to actually document it and to talk about it and to share that experience with a larger population. You know, that was just really great to me. I think sometimes in our society we have a tendency or a desire to brush the ugliness under the carpet and ignore it. And, you know, Gordon Parks with his film work and with his writing and for me particularly with his photography wouldn't let us forget it. And I think that was a real important piece.
Thank you very much, Gary, for your contribution to the conversation. We're talking about the amazing life and legacy of Gordon Parks. We're going to go to Jake in South Kansas.
Yeah, pleasant good morning, all. Just curious whether you've touched, I've not caught the whole show, on his career in fashion photography, and then the work he did with Red Jackson, the gang work in Harlem, and just curious, the 30 pieces that are in the museum, did they hang in the hospital down there in Fort Scott 4, 5, 6 years ago for a long time?
Jill Warfer would probably be able to answer this question. We did talk a little bit about the work with Red Jackson there, Jake. Jill Warfer, you're sort of a curator of some of Mr. Parks' work. Can you address that?
Yes. No, the 30 photographs that he gave us for the museum are different from the 50-some photographs that are in Mercy Hospital, and they are still in there and probably will always be in there.
Okay.
Gordon was became friends with our mayor at the time, a man named Ken Lunt, and we were building a new hospital, and Ken was thinking, well, we need something to, you know, all these walls, and so he talked to Gordon, and Gordon donated several photographs and poems that they framed, and I think there's close to 50 altogether. And the nice thing is we only have, in our collection at the museum, we only have duplicates of maybe 3 or 4, I believe. So we call Fort Scott Park Central because we probably have the largest collection of his photographs, I would think, at least in Kansas, if not, you know, nationwide. I don't know for sure. But, yeah, they are still hanging out at the Mercy Hospital.
Speak briefly, Jill Wolford, about what Jake said about his fashion photography. Talk about that.
Right, and that's something that people don't realize, that he really, you know, got his start. There's a story after he started taking photographs, he went to this department store in Minneapolis and was going to take photographs for the department store, fashion photography. He went in and talked to the owner, and he said, well, I don't know. I mean, you know, here's this young black guy. And so the owner's wife came out, and so he got the job. He overexposed every photograph except one. He took it into her, and she said, if you can do work like this, you have the job. And she said, but next time, don't overexpose them. But that's really how his fashion photography started. And then he worked for Vogue. He worked for Mademoiselle. I mean, he worked for all the big fashion magazines and earned a lot of his living in the early days from that. And we do have some of his fashion photographs here in the collection, too.
A big influence on Annie Leibovitz as well, which a lot of people may not be aware of. You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. We're discussing the remarkable life and legacy of a man who had an influence on Annie Leibovitz, Spike Lee, Quentin Tarantino, and a lot of people that you know today but don't know they were influenced by Gordon Parks. Our guests are Jill Warfer, Executive Director of the Gordon Parks Museum and Center for Culture and Diversity, and we also have in studio a personal friend of Gordon Parks, Dr. Bernard Franklin. Both of our guests have encountered Gordon Parks personally and are involved in bringing his legacy forward. Kansas City, if you have any thoughts or memories about Gordon Parks yourself, any personal encounters, a favorite photograph, little-known facts, encounters with Gordon himself, give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write in at centralstandard@kcur.org. How does the Center for Culture and Diversity there in Fort Scott, Jill, drive Gordon Parks' message of unity across the world, and his penchant in wanting to reach out to more than just the African-American community?
Right. Well, we do have the Gordon Parks Celebration, which is an annual event, and this year was our 9th year. We bring a person in to honor every year in Gordon's name. Actually, the it's called the Choice of Weapons Award, and we bring somebody in who has done, who has excelled in some area that Gordon has, or is a humanitarian or civil rights person. We've had Richard Roundtree, we've had Ruby Dee, just different, all sorts of different people. But we do have a celebration, and that's in the fall, and that's where we do spend quite a bit of time either panel discussions or persons talking about giving talks about Gordon and talking also about civil rights. We've had some great panel discussions on civil rights type of activities. And then out throughout the year, we try to bring some speakers in that'll talk either about Gordon or they'll talk about some aspect of African-American life. We've had a speaker in from the Humanities Council talking about the black newspapers in Kansas. So anything that relates, we try to bring speakers in. And then we also try to do a lot of things for kids. And we have poetry contests. We have essay contests. We have a Gordon Parks International Photography Contest that actually has been going on at the college for 24 years. And we get entries from all over the world for that. So, and that is a traveling exhibit after it's on display out here. It travels around to different places. So we try to keep our activities going. And, of course, the development of the museum, when we built this new fine arts building out here on the campus 3 years ago, we wrote a grant to the Kresge Foundation, and it was funded at the tune of almost $1 million. So we were able to include this new space in our Fine Arts Center for the museum, which is about 3,000 square feet. So getting people to come into the museum, developing programs for it, that's kind of our mission.
We're talking about the life and legacy of Gordon Parks here on Central Standard. You are listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. We're discussing the remarkable life and legacy of Gordon Parks with Jill Warford, the executive director of the Gordon Parks Museum and Center for Culture and Diversity, and a personal friend, Dr. Bernard Franklin. You're also taking Gordon Parks' legacy forward, Dr. Franklin, with education.
We're here at the Gordon Parks Charter School, which is an elementary charter school of some of the most challenging young people in our region. And we're working hard at the school in a very diligent manner to give his vision to these young people. And by that I mean helping them understand it doesn't matter where you come from. It matters what you want to do and what your abilities are. So we talk a lot about his music. We talk about writing. We talk about things that, you know, maybe these young people would feel like, I can't do that. And we say, well, Gordon Parks said that too. Or Gordon Parks might have thought that, but he moved into it and found he could do it. And so he kept moving forward. So the school really works hard at perpetuating his legacy.
If there's ever an example of someone who, if you put your mind to it, I think Gordon Parks would definitely apply here. Craig, emails us in at centralstandard@kcur.org, says, for me, his history on the critically ill Brazilian boy Flavio da Silva. Flavio is a very famous photo of Gordon Parks was a turning point for how Craig himself, how I, he says, approached my work as a photojournalist. We didn't have to be dispassionate observers, Craig says. Our work could make a difference in people's lives. Gordon Parks' work on Flavio saved the boy's life and enabled a prosperous future. So there's an example right there of Gordon Parks being an influence on photographers today. We have Darrell in KC. Welcome to Central Standard. Darrell?
This is Darrell.
Darrell. Sorry.
Yes, Darrell Roller. Jill will know me. I worked with her down at the Fort Scott at the museum there. And you talked about the pictures. One of the things I would say would be some of the ones that he didn't take, and Jill can correct all of my mispronunciations here, but on movie sets there was always a still photographer, and Gordon was on with one with Ingmar Bergman and Roberto Rossellini in Stromboli. And at that time, they were kind of having an affair, and Gordon could have got such a shot, but he put his camera down. And they said something to him, why didn't you take it? And he says, well, I was out of film. I think that's just in such contrast to the paparazzi today. And another time, Gordon was called in to Muhammad Ali, called Gordon in after a fight that he had lost. And he says, well, here's the picture you want, Gordon. He says, oh, I ran out of film. In ending this, I would say, too, to everyone listening, be sure and go down to the museum at Fort Scott. I live up here now, and I volunteer at the World War One Museum. Well, the museum that Jill has put together is not near as big as that in a different venue, but it's as professionally done, and it's free.
Thank you very much. Talk about that, Jill, if you will, for a brief moment. Gordon Parks is very generous mode towards people. The famous I ran out of film anecdotes.
Right, right. Those are definite stories that tell you a little bit about what type of person he was, because he didn't take advantage of people. And because Ingrid Bergman, that was a big scandal at the time, you know. That was, the 1940s, I guess, and it was a huge scandal. And she was shunned for years because of her affair with Roberto Rossellini. And after she saw that he did that, knew what she did, she trusted him completely, and she invited him out to take pictures of her and Roberto Rossellini and the filming and things like that. And he got some incredible shots. In fact, we've got one in here, and it's called Ingrid Bergman on Stromboli, and it's just, I don't know how he got the shot, but it's these women in dark clothes, kind of, you know, people from the village who recognized her, and they're giving her that look like, oh, you know, that's the American actress. And he caught such an incredible moment in her life that transcended just her. It told about what was going on, you know, how people looked down on her at the time. And there's a lot of different stories that of him doing that, and then, you know, people trusted him and knew then that they could count on him to be a fair photographer. And I think, like Daryl said, the paparazzi are certainly not like that today.
The Muhammad Ali story, Dr. Franklin, is a very often told one too.
Right, it is. But it does portray a man who wanted to show the world the human aspects of poverty, the human aspects of failure, but not to the character, not to the destruction of the individual. So he didn't want the world to see Muhammad Ali at his worst. That wasn't the kind of exposure he wanted Muhammad Ali to have.
Is it fair to say that he wanted to show the world the human aspects of humanity?
I would say that's a perfect way of describing it.
What do you think Gordon Parks, Jill Warford, would think of the explosion of digital photography, social media, paparazzi, viral video, camera phones, stuff like that, based on what you know about him? What do you think?
That's a lot, Jill.
Well, I don't know. I have a hard time with that myself. I think, you know, Gordon was forward-thinking, and he probably would have embraced some of it. He had his computer that he started working on at home, and everybody laughs. Bobby Burrows, who's the photo editor at Life magazine, was our honoree this year, and she was talking about, you know, that Gordon learned how to fax on his computer, and she said, you know, you'd hear the fax machine and know it was Gordon sending her stuff. So, and he would type up his poems on his computer, but then Joanna would come in and send them to whoever needed to be sent. So I don't know. I think he'd shake his head at it and probably, you know, try a little bit of it, but who knows what. I don't think he had done digital photography. I don't think he had a digital camera. I think he was still using, and in his later years, he just wasn't taking as many photographs. He was taking some art photographs that he took in his home. He would take, there's a whole book on that. He would take everyday objects and light them in different ways and take, they're just some beautiful photographs.
I'm going to go to Lolita in KCK. Lolita.
Yes, I'm here.
Welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you. Gordon Parks. Good morning.
Go ahead.
When I was in elementary school and middle school, I was an avid reader, and I attended a private school, and my sisters and brothers attended a public school, and they would bring home flyers encouraging them to write in the contest about their favorite author. And so I didn't have it in my school, and so I would tell them, do it, because, you know, I can't do it in my school, and they wouldn't do it. So I did it. What I did was I took one of the books, A Choice of Weapons, that Gordon Parks wrote, and I opened up the flap and got his publisher's address out of it. And I wrote to him and told him if I could get in that contest, I would write about him. because I read all of his stuff, and he inspired me. And 2 years ago, I published my first book. He wrote me back and told me that I was the one person, me and people like me, that continue to make him do the things that he did because we kept him young and inspired him. That's and so I just wanted to share that with everybody.
That's a great story.
That's a very inspiring story, Lolita.
That's beautiful, yeah.
We're talking
about today is my 50th birthday.
Wow, and you're in November as well as Gordon Parks as well.
Exactly.
Thank you very much, Lolita, for that. Do you remember your very last encounter with Gordon Parks before he passed on, Dr. Franklin?
Mine is a very vivid one. I was assistant dean of students back at K-State, and they had given me permission to go to his 80th birthday party. And understand, I'm sort of embarrassed to tell this, it had been 20 years since I had seen him or had contact with him. So we're at the Howard Johnson Hotel in Times Square at his 80th birthday party. It's a star-studded event. Harry Belafonte, I walk in the ballroom, and Gordon is shaking hands with then-Mayor Koch. And I'm probably a couple hundred feet away from him, but he recognizes me in front of everybody. And he says, "Bernard Franklin, what are you doing here?" It was one of those poignant moments that demonstrates this man's ability to not forget you.
And we won't forget him as well. We've been talking about Gordon Parks, his remarkable influence and legacy, the native Kansan on the world. Our guests have been Jill Warford, Executive Director of the Gordon Parks Museum and Center for Culture and Diversity in Fort Scott, Kansas, and joining us, who give us a personal anecdote, Dr. Bernard Franklin. Thank you both for joining us to talk about Gordon Parks.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
And you can find our shows, podcasts, archives, and a lot more at kcur.org. Tune in tomorrow when we explore the musical stylings of the Kansas band Lazy, that plus a chat with a frequent contributor to This American Life about his book of essays titled My Heart is an Idiot. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton. Up to Date is next with Missouri House Speaker Tim Jones. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.